As our planet continues to warm and governments move slowly to address the threats of climate change, young people are feeling fear and anxiety over the planet's future.
I definitely at first just kind of wallowed in my own anxiety and was like, oh wow, so like there's nothing to do, like it's over. As someone who's young, who can't vote, who's still in school, you oftentimes feel helpless when it comes to things like this because you think that there's a limit onto what you can do.
That's Seema, a 16-year-old from New York City. And Seema's like a lot of kids who say they're stressed by the state of our planet. A recent poll from the Washington Post and the Kaiser Family Foundation found that 57% of teenagers aged 13 to 17 say the issue of climate change makes them feel afraid.
As soon as you understand that every decision you make has a lasting consequence on everyone around you and there is no escape, it becomes like there's a legitimate mental strain with that.
I still have climate anxiety on a daily basis.
I have nightmares about like hurricanes. And why is that? That should not be a thing. So now we're getting to a point where people are scared beyond just reading the news, but actually within themselves.
Those were young people that organized Friday climate strikes in New York City, speaking with WNYC reporter Gwen Hogan. And while many kids are feeling anxious about global warming, they're also leading calls to action.
Sea levels are rising, and so are we. Sea levels are rising, and so are we.
We are unstoppable. A better world is possible. Stop denying the earth is dying. Stop denying the earth is dying.
These consequences will face us during our lifetime, and it is already happening now. And it will get worse. So I think that is why so many young people especially care about this.
That's Greta Thunberg, the Swedish teen activist speaking on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Greta's been a driving force behind a global youth movement for action against climate change. And she'll be leading more protests this week in New York City ahead of the United Nations Climate Action Summit. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. And all this week, we'll be covering stories of climate change as part of a collaboration with 250 other media organizations called Covering Climate Now. As young people grapple with the realities of climate change, parents are faced with decisions ranging from how to talk about climate change with their kids to whether to have children at all.
Hi, my name is Taylor Michael from Tarzana, California. Climate change has affected my decision to become a parent. At 26, I'm seriously thinking about if I want to bring a child into this world with such a grim future ahead of them. I'd much rather adopt a child that's already here and teach them to be a responsible adult who cares about the earth.
Hi, this is Elizabeth from Oakland, California. I chose not to have children because of climate change, and I made that decision decades ago. I worked with a lot of scientists, and I understood the problem very early on.
Hi, this is Mike from Portsmouth. Originally, I was very hesitant to have children, but it was important to my wife. As it stands, I'm deeply concerned about the state of the climate, as are my children. As it may be, I would not encourage them to have children of their own.
And some of you also told us the climate is impacting how you parent.
Hi, this is Leslie from Los Angeles, and I still plan to be a parent, but climate change has definitely affected my decision to go about it in a way that's minimalist and ecological.
My name is Elizabeth Ackerman from Los Angeles. Personally, I worry a lot about the world my kids will live in. I train them some basics of survival without electricity and plumbing. I use sustainable practices, and I teach them that we must all look out for and help each other.
Thanks for weighing in at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Let's open this up now to two experts on parenting and climate change. John Fraser is a conservation psychologist and president and CEO of Knowledgy, and he's also the editor of Springer Nature's Psychology and Our Planet series. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you for having me.
And Megan Kallman is the co-founder of Conceivable Future, an organization that helps bring people together to talk about how the threat of climate change impacts the decision to have children and how we raise our children. She's also an assistant professor at the School for Global Inclusion and Social Development at UMass Boston. Megan, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
So, John, let's start with you. We just heard a lot of young people that are talking about their anxiety around the around climate. How is that related to the stress that their parents might be feeling?
There's a pretty direct connection between parents' sense of anxiety or fear and how their children are responding to it. Children translate what they hear from the adult world around them, but they're doing it in very simple ways. So they are not able to weigh the strength of the problem. And that causes a great deal of anxiety.
And what do we know about, John, about how climate anxiety actually shows up in adults? Like, what does it look like?
It often manifests in how people present themselves. You can see elevated anger, concern, just stress behaviors are very common. So, you know, just fighting about basic things, being upset. We see at the extreme level, when people are in grocery stores, they find themselves a little short of breath because they're looking around at all of the single-use plastic, all of the chemicals that are being produced, all of the toxics that are around us. And quite honestly, it starts to make them anxious, and so they may behave in ways which are not as, they're stuck in this place of just not knowing how to deal with all that stuff coming at the same time.
But John, aren't parents really good at hiding their emotions from their kids?
Not at all. Mm-hmm. I know of no parent who can hide their emotions from kids.
Mm-hmm. Megan, you've talked to parents about how climate change is impacting their parenting. What are they saying to you?
Well, I think there's sort of a range of fears that parents or would-be parents face that we've seen in our work, right? On one end of the spectrum is this bundle of concerns about how my child's life is going to affect the fate of the planet, right? Everything from enough diapers to circle the earth to carbon footprints to, you know, the amount of plastic that it takes to get somebody through first grade. And on the other end of the spectrum is a set of concerns about how a hotter, meaner, more volatile, less stable world is going to affect the futures of those children or those would-be children. And then everything in between. So parents and would-be parents, and I think one of the things that's really worth pointing out is that in our work, the same fears apply to parents and people who are considering parenthood, that the world is going to be less stable in significant ways, and everybody's trying to figure out how to be responsible, loving, parents in that context, and then also to push for this kinds of systemic changes that we need so this isn't a reality that confronts generation after generation after generation.
Now, we know birth rates, Megan, in the United States are already low, but when we think about more and more people choosing not to have kids at all because of climate change, what effect is that going to have overall as we move forward?
Well, one thing I would point out is that even without the threat of climate change, the United States has as close to an antinatal policy as you could get without actually calling it an antinatalist policy, right? We don't have universal health care. We don't have child care, medical, strangers beg strangers for money to pay their medical bills on the internet, right? We have food deserts. We have this, we have that. So I think what we're seeing is a confluence of lots of kinds of crises that are exacerbated by the climate crisis, right? So birth rates are dropping, but that's not entirely due to climate change. The climate change figures quite heavily into it, according to a recent poll from Business Insider. A third of Americans of childbearing age consider climate in considering their decision whether or not to have children. But what we stress is the interconnectedness of all of these issues. If for instance, the medical system and sort of the social safety nets that that generations of Americans have relied on up until now were in better shape, we might have people feeling differently about their ability to cope with the impending crisis.
John, we know that we just talked a little bit about how parents' behavior can impact how their kids feel about climate change, but there are other sources of information that kids are getting, particularly today, online, in social media, yeah, in school, in the media itself. I mean, how important are those sources to kids feeling anxiety?
Well, they're all primary sources for a child. So what they're hearing at school, what they're seeing on the internet, these things can't be hidden anymore. Parents can try to cloister their children, but they are getting these three sources. The parent is the primary referent for the child. School is the second. And then the internet and what their friends are saying, sharing with on their smartphones, becomes a third source. All of those places are setting the context. So when there's contradiction, they may be a little bit more confused, but they're still getting a lot of information from all over. And it's really their parents that are guiding them through that information.
And Don, when we talk about concerns that really that fall into two categories here, worrying about contributing to the problem by having kids at all, or worrying about what your own children will face if you bring them into this world, what do you think about those concerns?
I think they're real. I think it's quite reasonable to be anxious about the state of the climate. This is really no different than what parents went through when we were experiencing plague, when we've been experiencing war. I mean, catastrophic events have affected people over generations, and people tend not to have children during wartime. Go figure. It's fairly mm-hmm. reasonable to make those decisions. A negative birth rate is actually going to be positive for our response to the climate issue. So I don't think that deciding to have children or not is necessarily grounded in the it's not the worst thing to do, because there are still going to be children in this world that we can bring up. And I think we heard that in one of the earlier conversations, that someone's choosing to adopt. So negative birth rate's still a decent solution, because especially in the Western developed world, we are still, even with a child, no matter how sustainably we live, we are part of a system that relies on a lot of carbon-producing products.
Megan, we heard from a couple listeners that they are choosing adoption instead of having their own children. And here on the show, we've talked about how adoption can play out differently for different kinds of people, whether they're women of color, low-income women. I'm wondering, what demographic breakdown are you hearing from when you're talking to folks, Megan? Are there gender or racial differences when it comes to how people are processing these issues?
Yes, there very much are. I mean, the folks that we talk to are primarily well-educated. They are primarily, though not exclusively, white. And they are primarily, though not exclusively, linked into some sort of organizing already. And I will say that there's some pretty interesting, so with those caveats, there's some pretty interesting breakdowns, particularly as regards gender. So one of the things that we have found is that women tend to experience a lot more pressure to parent relative to men. And that, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. There's a sort of a long history of socialization. There's sort of these cultural tendencies towards, revering the figure of mother, et cetera. You know, and also a lot of it, frankly, is sexism, right? Is that we tend to consider men whole people, whether or not they decide to parent. But the same cannot be true of women. And so women are called all sorts of names if they choose not to have children. And they're pressured, lovingly and otherwise, by members of their family, by media, by sort of public characterizations. And so this is another place where the realities of the climate crisis run into other realities that exist in our world, right? The ways that, for instance, women and men are treated differently. And I have a comment about the adoption issue, too, which is that, you know, it's not a silver bullet, right? We have to take a serious look at the systems and the structures that cause so many children to need other homes in the first place. Holding up this idea of everybody adopting begs the question of who exactly we're all adopting, right? And where those children are coming from, whose children they were. You have to also be considering the factors that lead so many children to need new homes, right? Whether those factors are addiction, whether they are institutionalized racism, whether they are poverty, whether they are natural disasters. Those are problems that we need to solve. And so to sort of put forward adoption as this, you know, fix really, really requires that we take a hard look at who these kids are that we think that we're adopting, right? It's not a straightforward issue, is my point.
And I want to give John a second to weigh in. I mean, I know, John, that on this show, we've talked extensively about adoption and who gets to do it, who doesn't get to do it, who's sort of left out of the process. It tends to favor couples. It tends to favor heterosexual couples and those folks with money. But you wanted to make a point on adoption.
Well, actually, I didn't want to make a point on adoption. I want to make the point of adults being parents, no matter whether they adopt children, have children, are kinship families, or however you interact with children. The climate crisis is really something that we need to manage in terms of our parenting skills. Parenting does not require me to have a child. It doesn't require me to adopt a child. It means when I interact as an adult and think about the climate crisis, it's important to help a child process that information. So I agree there are systems at play that lead to privilege, lead to kids needing different kinds of love in their life because they weren't raised that way, or the systemic exclusion of entire classes of people. That's a problem. But that is not related to the climate crisis. That is a social safety net issue in the United States that does not affect other countries. The climate crisis is a global problem, and parents are dealing with it, or adults are dealing with it around the world. And so I think that's where we need to focus our attention.
Let's talk a little bit also about some solutions here, John, because we talked briefly in the first segment about there are generational patterns that we see where birth rates are affected by things that are happening in the world, like war, for example, the plague you mentioned. I mean, there's always something to be afraid of, right? Children are from different generations have dealt with this. So what are some solutions for anxiety on the part of parents and on the part of kids? What do we know about how we can ease their anxiety?
First, it's talking about it reasonably, not making it complicated, not making it seem out of control. What children are reacting to is their sense of safety, their sense of security. They need a sense of security and stability. But if you think about the pre-arming that parents did in the Jim Crow South when their children were facing discrimination, threats to their lives, and abuse, these parents, many of the good stories are parents talking about how to manage your care, be aware of what's going on around you, be able to be participant in the solution, and to think about what you do as a collective or as a group. Kids focus on teams when they're in that very sort of philosophically pure phase in that 6 to 10-year-old age. And it's great if we have a chance to talk to them about what our team is doing for good. So whether that was talking about participating in civil rights, whether that was talking about anything that might reduce war, or quite simply how we protect one another, those become the conversations that help a child process the threat without necessarily saying it's wrong or going away. And it's perfectly reasonable to say it stresses you out too as an adult.
Megan, let's talk about what you tell parents who come to groups and say, I'm just so stressed. I'm worried it's going to impact my kid. I mean, there's been a lot of talk recently about resilience. Aren't kids more resilient than we expect them to be? John's saying no, but Megan, I'm curious, what do you think?
I think our mandate is to, as John says, I really agree with this idea of talking about the collective process of making the world a world that we want to live in, right? We don't tell parents anything. We create a space in which parents and non-parents alike can come and bring their fears and their hopes and their concerns and their strategies and share them. And the idea is that in the process of coming together, exactly as he's suggesting, that we are able to make meaning for ourselves, that we are able to sort of give political voice to this sort of ambient sense of uncertainty and concern that everybody feels. And that process of meaning making, I think, is the most important part of what we do. We don't tell anybody to do or not to do anything. We create a space in which people can share strategies with each other and also just affirm that this is a really scary time to be alive. I mean, part of what has happened in the news media over the last 20 years around climate change is that this consistent campaign of misinformation has made people feel crazy for having these concerns. And the thing that we most frequently hear in our community meetings is parents and non-parents alike arriving and saying, gosh, I thought I was the only one feeling this way. And so we really stress the collective effect of like bringing people together so that they're not the only one to feel this way. And they have the solutions. We don't have all the solutions, right? People have the solutions in the groups. So we just try to create a group where the collective wisdom can really sort of come to fruition.
Megan Coleman is the co-founder of Conceivable Future. And John Fraser is a conservation psychologist and president and CEO of Knowledgy. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, my name is Trevor. I'm calling from Atrisco, New Mexico. I am 32-year-old male and do not have any children. I paid cash for a vasectomy about a year ago. In addition to the deep concerns I have about the health of the environment and the effect on natural resources for future generations, I am very concerned about the decline of mental health resulting from the crisis.
28 years ago, I became a parent, and at that time, I thought one was enough because we were already overpopulated. I taught my daughter about the world, about where we are, and her feeling now is, how can I bring a defenseless little being into this screwed-up world? So I guess I'll never be a grandparent, which is sad, but at the same time, it's scary to think of what the world's going to be like and what a grandchild would have to go through.
And thanks so much for sharing your thoughts on this. Keep calling us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. And we'll continue to bring you climate coverage this week in advance of the UN Climate Summit happening a week from now. This is The Takeaway.